Hello there. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the issue of January 12th. Latest gig economy, training artificial intelligence how to do your job. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Catherine Bindley. One of the Bay Area's hottest startups today is hiring like crazy. The catch? You have to be willing to train artificial intelligence to one day do your job as well as you can. So, welcome to the next gig economy. Instead of driving for Uber or delivering Postmates, a new wave of workers today is signing up to school artificial intelligence. These white-collar contractors review and critique the output of the large language models that power chatbots and other AI tools. Not just anyone can work for Mercor, an AI startup valued at $10 billion. Applicants have to demonstrate their abilities to the interview process. And you might work on the same project for weeks or even for months. The vast list of subject area experts Mercor seeks includes astronomers, psychologists, industrial engineers, filmmakers, creative writers, comedians, legal experts, investment bankers, and venture capitalists. A dermatologist can make as much as $250 an hour, helping a healthcare partner develop its decision support tools. Poets who enhance artificial intelligence's understanding of poetic structure, literary nuance, and emotional expression can earn as much as $150 an hour. Mercor hired over 30,000 contractors in 2025 to work on projects for some of the largest AI companies. Clients have included OpenAI and Anthropic. Economic uncertainty, tariffs, and a wait-and-see approach regarding the extent to which artificial intelligence can handle tasks have all contributed to a growing unemployment rate, which in November hit its highest level in 4 years. White-collar workers are finding themselves applying to hundreds of jobs. For many, that now includes gigs with Mercor. People can earn a $250 referral bonus by getting others to sign on with Mercor, contributing to a flood of job postings on LinkedIn and speculation that the whole thing must be a scam. It's not. But training AI to take over human tasks could be considered a dark irony in today's anemic job market. When Katie Williams, who is 30, first saw a job listed for Mercor, the posting said that the company was looking for a video editor. Williams, who lives in Houston, went to school for video editing and has worked in news and social media marketing. She applied and soon landed an interview conducted by an unseen AI proctor with a male-sounding voice. She wasn't quite sure what the job is going to entail, but the pay was as much as $45 an hour, and so she moved ahead. Williams is now about 6 months into various projects that have involved watching video clips and writing out captions of everything that's happening in them, and then rating the quality of videos generated by prompts. She has mixed feelings about the work. I joked with my friends, "I'm training AI to take my job someday," she says. Co-workers in her Slack channel expressed similar sentiments, she adds. They don't feel great about training AI, but they do feel that their jobs prospects are limited. Many of the people we work with already see AI as inevitable in their field, but that does not mean that humans will run out of meaningful work, a Mercor spokesperson said. Many of our experts see it as their responsibility to infuse their knowledge and expertise into the models to ensure accurate and thoughtful outcomes. Applicants undergo an initial video interview conducted by AI, and the company says a small percentage are required to share their screen to show their work. Once hired, the workers must install time tracking software. That software ensures that contractors are working during billable hours and are not cutting corners by using AI to critique the AI, which some have been caught doing, according to the Mercor spokesperson. After more than 20 years as an automotive journalist, Peter Valdez de Peña was laid off in 2024. He spent months sending out resumes for full-time jobs to no avail. One day, Mercor popped up in his LinkedIn feed. The 61-year-old now spends 20 to 30 hours a week critiquing AI's attempts at writing news articles. He finds the work challenging and says it has had the pleasant side effect of improving his writing. The nature of the work does produce some internal conflict. Valdez de Peña says journalists will always exist. He believes that people appreciate ideas in writing from humans, but he worries AI could lead to more job losses. Laura Kittel, an academic recurrent seeking nonprofit and government jobs, applied and soon got an offer. The next step for her was to sign a contract, which was reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. She interpreted it to mean that she was granting royalty-free rights to her existing and future academic papers and any other intellectual property that might benefit an unspecified Mercor client. Kittel tried to amend the contract. Melvin, a Mercor AI assistant, replied that via email that the contract could not be amended. If she didn't like it, she could walk. Mercor says the contract only applies to a worker's writing, code, or other intellectual property if the worker chooses to use it in the course of their project. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 1st of December. The things we lose with remote work and how to minimize the damage. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Peter Capelli and Rania Nemeh. Offices have historically been where relationships are built and learning happens. The key is figuring out how to keep those things with hybrid work. Remote and hybrid work have become defining features of the post-pandemic economy. While most employees seem to love it, the initial optimistic assessment during the pandemic that remote work was a success has now given way to a more sobering reality for many organizations. Performance, collaboration, innovation, and workplace culture are taking a measurable hit. It's easy to think of the office as just a physical space, but it's much more than that. Offices function as social infrastructure where relationships and trust are built. Informal learning happens, and problems can be solved quickly across desks and departments. Before the pandemic, office work had never been separated from an office at scale. Now, we know that when we separate them, we aren't just shifting where work happens, we're weakening the relationships and the connective tissue that holds teams and organizations together. What used to happen organically now requires effort to reproduce, and unfortunately, too many organizations are failing at it. Office evolution. So how did the office become such an important physical and social institution in the U.S.? It started with the growth of clerical work and the corporate enterprise back in the 1920s. Early offices were designed to centralize access to the explosion of paper documents from thriving industries such as insurance and to enable the supervision of workers, much like factories did for industrial labor. The rise of skyscrapers with their wide open interior spaces made it possible to organize offices and desks following scientific management principles to improve productivity, even down to how workers stuffed envelopes. Starting back in the 1930s, a growing awareness that office work was more than just moving paper led to a rethinking of office designs to support interaction, creativity, and employee well-being. Researchers found that what managers actually did was resolve conflicts, build internal networks, and negotiate priorities with other people. Even many rank-and-file workers had to informally negotiate, coordinate, and problem-solve with others, reminding us that workers don't get their work done just by themselves. Corporate offices adapted by adding break rooms and creating spaces for informal meetings and discussions. By the 1960s, the prevailing wisdom was that offices should be designed with human needs in mind, factoring in light, noise, views, and privacy to enhance performance. Some of these efforts were comical. Long, narrow corridors were intentionally designed to spark spontaneous conversations, believed to promote innovation, as exemplified by the former Bell Labs headquarters now featured in the TV show Severance. So, of course, getting work done wasn't the only benefit of being together. About 22% of older employees report that they met their spouse at the office, too. Shrinking offices. By the 1980s, restructuring and cost-cutting efforts reversed all that. The average size of an office has shrunk roughly 50% since then. Consultants and staff, sales staff who work in the field, started losing their offices altogether. The notion of hoteling, where employees reverse office space on an as-needed basis, started in Silicon Valley during the dot-com era in response to a shortage of office space. It died there because employees hated it, but now it is back with a vengeance. Indeed, the work-from-home push that some thought was temporary during the pandemic has continued on in part because employers used the opportunity to cut office space and real estate costs. In mid-2020, with the pandemic still in full swing, a KPMG survey showed that nearly 70% of CFOs already planned to reduce their office footprint permanently. And many did, making it impossible to bring everyone back to the office. But even though many employers allow hybrid schedules these days, some are unhappy with how it is working out in practice. The most obvious concern is that whatever a company's stated policies are, many hybrid employees are not working in the office on their designated days. In one survey, for example, almost half of business leaders say that their workers do not show up on their anchor days, while others report problems with coffee badging, meaning the workers come in, grab a coffee, and then go home. Another problem is that employees are swamped with far too many unproductive virtual meetings. Meetings are taking the place of quick conversations that used to happen in person. And online meetings are so much bigger because anyone can join at the click of a mouse. The complaints from CEOs, however, tend to focus on more fundamental issues, such as our people are not learning, we are not innovating, we are slower to get things done, and so forth. Those concerns have been bolstered by recent academic studies documenting precisely those negative effects associated with remote work. In fact, many companies have indicated that they plan to unwind hybrid and remote work. A survey by KPMG in July and August of 2024 found that 83% of 1,325 CEOs of large companies in 11 countries expected their organizations to require a full return to the office within the next 3 years. So, what can be done? It is too soon now to know how many will follow through on those plans, so it is likely that hybrid and remote work will continue to play a role in the workplace landscape, at least for now. That raises the question, how can companies avoid the negatives that come with a hybrid workplace? Many of the problems with hybrid work lie with management, specifically bosses who don't know how or have not been trained to manage teams that are not together. But there are some simple things that employers can do to make hybrid work more effective, and they include such things as enforce attendance on the days employees are supposed to be in the office and set rules for meetings such as limiting attendance and requiring that cameras be on if joining remotely. When cameras are on, participants can't multitask or pretend to be paying attention when they are not. These changes start with supervisors. Wharton MBA students told us that in their hybrid offices, if the boss came in, they did too. If the boss's camera was on in meetings, so was theirs. Otherwise, they didn't do either. Also, they need to take onboarding seriously. It has to be in person and more intense for hybrid employees who have limited opportunities to learn from others on the job. Assign new hires to experienced partners, make a list of people that should meet, and give them introductions. Bring these new hires back together periodically for social events or classes. And remember, almost everyone who says they can handle working remotely began their careers working full-time in an office where they met the people who could help them. Also, they need to redefine job responsibilities. During the COVID lockdowns, when many offices were completely shut down, tasks associated with individual performance became the focus for managers and often the basis for promotions. While that certainly did make sense during the crisis, it came at the expense of tasks that require collaboration, such as group projects, helping colleagues, and mentoring new hires. Now, with most employees working in person at least some of the time, bosses need to make clear that collaborative work is just as important as individual work, perhaps by tying it to performance reviews and promotion prospects. Another stipulation is to make it useful to be in the office. Schedule meetings on anchor days, which inevitably will squeeze down their length. Encourage relationship building by organizing purposeful activities that will help teams and the groups that support them get to know each other better. Finally, they need to stop cutting office space. A smaller real estate footprint means fewer employees can work together in person at any given time and increases the likelihood that new hires will not live anywhere within commuting distance of an office where they can get to know colleagues. Efforts to build critical work relationships then get harder. These suggestions will be easy to blow off if they are left to local managers to execute and enforce. As we have long known, change has to come from the top. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 3rd of December. Data centers are a gold rush for workers. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Tae-Ping Chen. Six-figure pay is offered for people in trades as investment pours into AI infrastructure. Dimond Chambliss used to run himself ragged with a small contracting business he owned in Columbus, Ohio. Hanging drywall, chasing clients for payments, and managing half a dozen employees. Since April, Chambliss has worked the night shift overseeing a team of 200 welders, plumbers, and electricians at a local data center construction site. He makes more than $100,000 a year, a significant increase from his previous pay, cruising around on a buggy under floodlights, overseeing deliveries and equipment, and ensuring everything stays on schedule. I pinch myself going to work every day, the 51-year-old said. An investment boom in artificial intelligence is creating a thirst for massive data centers and a bonanza for the workers building them. It is unclear how long that boom is going to last, but for now, workers such as Shambliss are cashing in on high demand for their services. They are enjoying the trappings, including perks, bonuses, and in many cases, pay boosts. Data centers do not employ many workers once they are actually built. During construction, though, they are a hive of workers pouring concrete walls and foundations, wiring electric panels, and installing equipment such as power generators and chillers to ensure that servers are cooled to a precise temperature at all times. Given such complexity and high demand, workers who move into the data center industry in roles ranging from electricians to project managers often earn 25% to 30% more than they did before, said Jake Rasweiler, Senior Vice President of Data Centers at Kelly Services, a staffing and recruitment firm. It's like the gold rush, Shambliss said. Data centers are ballooning in size, and a single project can take years to construct and require thousands of workers. Tech giants such as Amazon.com, Google, and Microsoft operate 522 data centers and have an additional 411 data centers in development, according to Synergy Research Group. In Hermiston, Oregon, Mark Benner, who is 60, arrives in the pre-dawn hours at a data center construction site and lines up with scores of workers for a series of synchronized stretches. After that, he spends his day making the rounds ensuring electrical safety. These are lucrative skills at the electricity gobbling sites, and Benner makes $225,000 each year. It's my American dream, said Benner, who has been helping build data centers for 15 years, including the ones now powering artificial intelligence. Kloon Construction, a Chicago-based general contractor, said it is trying to ensure workers have access to the same creature comforts as white-collar workers, including heated and air-conditioned break tents and perks such as periodic free lunches. Around 70% of the company's revenue is from data center work, a figure that has roughly doubled in the past year. Construction firm Sunt, based in Tempe, Arizona, recently started offering bonuses and paid time off to workers on its sites. Still, the company regularly has to turn down more projects, said Chad Buck, Sunt's president of building. There are not enough people to build the magnitude of the work out there right now, Buck said. There is only a set pool to pull from, and every general contractor in the country is trying to pull from it right now. Construction workers say this heavy demand has created a sense of security that for them is often elusive. In this industry, stability is a really big thing, said Michael Dam, who is 43 and makes $200,000 a year, overseeing concrete construction at three data center sites for Sunt. When I first started in the trades, you had to save up all your money in the event you had to sit out for a month or two with no work, Dam said. These days, he says, his phone regularly lights up with messages from recruiters eager to lure him to other jobs. In some cases, higher pay is attracting more workers to data center sites around the country. Sean Jones, 39, said he makes around $100,000 a year as a general foreman for DPR Construction at a data center in Abilene, Texas, around 20% more than what he said he would earn if he stayed home in Colorado. If he goes back once or twice a month to see his family, driving 10 hours each way. Some workers don't even have to travel. Schweiger Construction recently began hiring senior project managers on a remote basis to oversee data center job sites in places from South Carolina to Indiana. I don't care where they live, company president Jay Bloom said, as long as they're in the continental United States and they can fly out to wherever they need to be. As an addendum to this article, high demand comes up against skills shortage. Demand for workers is colliding with a long-standing shortage of skilled tradespeople that has pinched the construction industry. The Associated Builders and Contractors Trade Group estimates that the construction industry is short roughly 439,000 workers, mostly among skilled workers who do things such as lay pipe and wire electrical panels. The effects are starting to pile up. A survey by the Uptime Institute of Data Center Equipment Manufacturers, Engineers, and Construction Companies found that 52% said staffing shortages on sites caused business disruptions, up from 43% last year. Contractors working on data centers have an average backlog of 10.9 months of work, compared with 8 months for their peers, according to data from ABC. There is an arms race out there taking place in the world of artificial intelligence, said ABC chief economist Anirban Basu. Switching to a different subject, the Wall Street Journal recently wrote a report about a woman who is 65 years old. The woman had a long search for employment after a layoff. Her story touched a nerve with many readers, many of whom are also hunting for work in a tough job market while feeling as though their age counts against them. Next week, I'd like to read this article for you about how older applicants are navigating their job hunt. But this is all the time that we have for on our program on careers today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.